Tonight should be the, I think, the last of our talks on springing from the book Basic Buddhist Concepts by Kogen Mizuno. Last week we started a chapter called The Threefold Learning as the final chapter, and talked a little bit about the threefold learning are comprised of precepts, meditation, and wisdom. We talked a little bit about the precepts last week, and since I've been, I suppose it's my own prejudice and predilection, I can't imagine talking about practice or Buddhism without talking about meditation. So throughout the whole series of talks, we've been talking about meditation. So I thought that I would spend tonight talking about wisdom and the practice of wisdom and call that it. Wisdom in Buddhism there's a line in the book where he is talking about you can have meditation and you can have the precepts, and the practice of meditation and the precepts you can have in a way independent of Buddhism. The thing that Buddhism brings to those two practices and makes their own is the idea of wisdom, and particularly the idea of awakening to wisdom, enlightenment. So in a sense, the idea of wisdom, the idea of awakening are, and they're slightly different things, awakening and wisdom, but they are the enlivening principle of Buddhism and the thing which makes it a different practice than just the meditation you learn because your doctor said you need to lower stress, and if you meditate, you can lower stress. Or the precepts that you follow in order to get along with your fellow man, or whatever, or because it's the law. So, wisdom is a pretty important idea in Buddhism, and in a way we don't talk about it, as we were talking about last week, we don't really talk about it overtly all that much as wisdom. But it occurred to me that we actually are pointing to the practice of wisdom all the time. Reverend Master Rokuzan is really fond of and feels it's important to talk about, or I believe this is true, about asking for help, the idea of asking for help. And it occurred to me as I was thinking about this that that quality of asking for help is in fact what we're talking about in terms of practicing wisdom. So let me explain what I mean by this. In the Udana scripture, the Buddha said, O monks, there is a not born, unformed, undying, uncreated. If it were not so that this unformed, undying, uncreated were not in existence, there would be no escape from that which is born and created and formed. There would be no escape from suffering. And that unbornness, that unborn quality of things, that which is pure, that which is beyond our phenomenal existence, it is by coming to know that, and that is what we talk about realizing wisdom, about gaining wisdom when we come to be at one with that in a practical sense. And when we're asking for help, when we're asking for help in terms of our meditation practice, we are in a way inviting that unborn quality, that unborn nature of life, to help to be present in our life and to help us. We often think about asking for help in terms of how to deal with a particular problem that we are faced with. You know, I need help working on my flat tire, dealing with this flat tire. I need help getting along with so-and-so. I need help keeping this precept. All these things are perfectly reasonable places to ask for help. But in a way, there is this deeper meaning to asking for help, which is the asking for help to let go of the limitation of our minds, to let go of the limitation of our past habitual patterns, to let go of our tendencies to create suffering for ourselves, to let go of ourself. And that is a more open quality of asking for help. That is a more open-ended quality of asking for help. Because basically we're saying, I'm willing to let go of whatever it is that I'm holding on to and step into awakening, really. So there is a way in which we, in a concrete sense, practice wisdom. The Buddha actually said, if you want to become wise, ask someone for help. Ask someone to teach you. And that is, in a sense, what we are doing. There is, within the Buddhism, a kind of, it's not exactly the right word for it, but is a worldly type of wisdom, a practical type of wisdom, which is how to get along with one another, how to manage your money, how to do all manner of things. And all of that type of wisdom is helpful. And all of those things we can learn from one another and from wise teachers, wise people. In a sense, this transcendent wisdom that we're talking about is wisdom that we learn as a result of our practice, that we learn from putting practice into action, is awakening that comes about because of our meditation practice and because of our willingness to ask for help. Oftentimes, if you read descriptions of people's awakening experiences, there will be a point where they get to this point where they just can't, in a way, bear it anymore, their koan, in a way. And there will be a kind of thing where people have described it as saying, please help me. I can't figure this out. Please help me. And in that moment, there is a kind of opening up. Now, so in addition to asking for help, the other part of our practice that leads to wisdom is the practice of giving and the practice of compassion. Master Daizi once said, if you want to know more about wisdom, if you want more wisdom, practice compassion. The practice of giving and the practice of compassion both have within them the elements that lead to wisdom. Remember that wisdom is also associated with the idea of shunyata, of emptiness. And the wisdom that we're talking about is, in this deepest sense, is the wisdom of not having a self, of letting go of self. And that wisdom is seeing the emptiness of our own body and mind. We discover the emptiness of body and mind by by the everyday practice of giving and compassion, incorporated with meditation, the giving of just being willing to let go of what we have and to make a positive offering to whomever comes our way. This generates great merit, but it also, and in the deeper sense, it generates the merit of being willing to let go of what we cherish. And also the practice of compassion is the same kind of thing, where we're letting go of getting something and being willing to give something to others. The sense of being willing to help others, even though it may not appear to benefit us. This is the practice of compassion. The recognition that suffering exists. Now, one of the interesting things about that is that part of how we practice wisdom, how we practice emptiness, is the bearing of suffering. Just the simple allowing suffering to be present in our life and to not, in a way, fight against it or resist it. We begin to see that there is no self which suffers, even though suffering still exists. What that means is that, on a kind of practical level, it means that we, in a way, make ourselves willing to put up with the difficulty of living with other beings. We train ourselves to the best of our ability to do that. To train ourselves to the best of our ability to live with the difficulty of our own self. And to look deeply into that. To see what's really going on. And to willingly make that offering to beings. It would be nice if we could all perfect ourselves within a couple of weeks of starting Buddhist practice, perfect our ability to keep the precepts, our ability to control the passions. It would be nice if we could all do that. But the reality of life is that that's just not going to happen. Beings are going to be imperfect. They're going to be difficult to bear. And that's how we begin, by being willing to enter into that with beings, by being willing to enter into that situation with beings, is how we practice wisdom, how we practice emptiness. And making that our training, in the sense of making, this is not an easy practice to do. Making it our training to learn from that experience of bearing the suffering of just being with other beings. And it's not unremitting awfulness most of the time, but sometimes beings can be a real pain in the neck. I'm speaking from my personal experience of being a being that can be a real pain in the neck. And part of my own being willing to bear suffering is to look at the consequences that I see that I leave behind when I'm a pain in the neck. And when I look clearly at that, it's in a way mortifying and difficult to bear. But there it is. That's our practice, to continue to be present, to look clearly. The more clearly I see what is really going on in my body and mind, the more I recognize the need for practicing this type of wisdom, the patient endurance of the uncreate is a phrase that I've come across to describe this. And that's the willingness to look through circumstances and see that things are empty, that things have no solid, substantial life. They have an arising, a being for a while, and a passing away. And to be grounded in that place through meditation and the precepts and the practice of giving and compassion, then we're able to bear the suffering of being with ourselves and being with beings. So in the last paragraph of his of this book, he says, wisdom is enlightenment to the true nature of the world and humankind, the principle of causation. In Buddhism, of course, this enlightenment is not merely intellectual understanding, but an actual physical and mental experience. So it's critical for us to understand that I can talk about wisdom either well or not so well. I can understand it intellectually and think about it. The critical thing is that we're willing to put it into practice, to put it into practice by acting on compassion, acting on generosity, acting on keeping the precepts and practicing meditation. It's critical that we do that because that's how we actually come to understand the experience of wisdom. Wisdom is not just an idea that we're imparted from someone else. It is a practice and an experience that we come to find and know in our own life. Giving and compassionate action are the inevitable and necessary social expressions of this enlightened view of the world. It's a cyclically supportive practice. The more we give and the more we're practicing compassion, the more we practice the wisdom of shunyata, the emptiness, the seeing through things, seeing through to the impermanence of things, the more we experience the depth of that, and then we're impelled in some way and willing to and grateful to give and practice compassion. So that there's a kind of cyclically supportive action going on. Thus, wisdom and compassion, that is both the proper understanding of dependent origination and the practice of shunyata that springs from that understanding. Now, see, there's a very interesting idea that emptiness is related to, our perception of emptiness is related to our clear-eyed view of causality. Of seeing how, for instance, if I behave like a twit to someone, how there's a consequence where they then treat me like I'm a twit. And to be able to understand that and to be able to be willing to bear those consequences without trying to retaliate or blame someone else for their not treating me the way I wish they would, is the beginning of the practice of shunyata, of emptiness. Okay, so let me be more explicit. I behave like a twit, I behave badly to someone, they treat me like I behave badly to people in a way that I don't like, and I see that that is true, and that is, there's a true relationship, a true connection between my behavior and their treatment of me. And in terms of practice, what I might, in terms of just worldly interaction, I might actually try to change their way of treating me in some way, influence them to change that. There might be some skillful necessity in that, but most of the time, there's a real kind of benefit in just being able to sit still and accept that treatment as the real consequence of your actions. And in sitting still and accepting that treatment, we both learn how to not be a twit and also then learn this deeper thing, which is the willingness to allow things to arise and pass away. Thus, let me read that sentence again completely. Thus, wisdom and compassion, that is, both the proper understanding of dependent origination and the practice of shunyata that springs from that understanding, have been the guiding spirit of Buddhism from its earliest beginnings to its most recent developments. Buddhism teaches that we must begin by properly understanding the way things are. From this, we know the way things should be. And then we throw ourselves into the practice to make things thus. So, again, in terms of practicing wisdom, in terms of practicing toward enlightenment, practicing for enlightenment, for awakening, we determine to see things as they actually are, determine to see how causality is playing out in our body and mind right now, determine to see things, see the selfishness that arises in our minds just as it is right now. We determine to practice compassion and wisdom, practice compassion and generosity for ourselves and for others as a way to teach ourselves to begin to get beyond the simple causality of things. There's a way in which we can think of causality, which I think tends to despair, where everything is based on past wrong actions, and there's no escape from that. But that's really not the Buddha's message. I heard a somewhat simple-minded description of a certain political kind of view in the United States, which kind of says we shouldn't give to the less fortunate as social policy, because the less fortunate are receiving the negative consequences of their bad actions, and we should just allow them to receive those negative consequences. And this is a kind of very rigid, limited, and non-Buddhist way of looking at causality. Because what the Buddha taught is that we, in order to generate positive consequences for ourselves, we must practice generosity, giving, and compassion for others, for those who are in less fortunate circumstances, for ourselves, for those who are even in better circumstances than us. Yes?
Could you also say showing that type of neglect for people could cause them bad consequences for themselves, getting in that mindset of just having neglect for other people like that?
Yes. Because what it is attaching yourself to the view that there is a limited amount of things, and there is a self inside of us which has only a limited number of resources, which is a deluded kind of view, and so increases the impoverished feeling that people have. The more we are able to practice compassion and generosity in our daily actions. And I'm truly not advocating any particular political view at this point. What I'm trying to point out is that is the necessity of compassion and the existence of compassion for ourselves. So I might like my health isn't so great. And I might think to myself, oh, my health isn't so great, so that's just the bad consequence of former bad actions, so I just need to bear it and shut up. But that is a fairly rigid and limited way of looking at things, and it seems better from my perspective and what I've been taught and my experience to actually do things to help myself and treat myself with kindness. So if we want to awaken to wisdom, if we want to awaken to the unborn, we must practice the asking for help. We must practice the practice of generosity and giving, practice of compassion. The word prajna is the word, is wisdom in Sanskrit. And it means before, one of the ways, if you take the word apart to its component parts, one of the interpretations of the word would mean before knowledge. Pra and jna is, jna would be knowledge, and pra would be pre, or before. So this wisdom that we're talking about, this awakened understanding of things, also implies the giving up of our way of thinking about things, of the accumulation of knowledge, the willingness to be in this, in the state of not knowing, or as River Master Hari likes to call it, the state of unknowing. And we find that state through the practice of meditation. Practically speaking, again, this isn't just a nice description, but it, practically speaking, it is the letting go of our opinions about the way things ought to be, about how people ought to treat us, about how what the world owes us, how the world should be organized, how things ought to be. And that is another aspect of what we need to work on giving up. Yes?
Is that what you just said about giving up the way you think people ought to treat us? I guess I was kind of relating that to what you were talking about, the relationship between shunyata and causality, I guess. In other words, acted this way, I feel I ought to be treated this way, but then when you recognize I acted this way, therefore I'm being treated this way, it takes some of the self out of it. It's a cause, it's effect. I'm not necessarily, it's not me, it's not them, it's just a relationship between action. Is that...
Yeah, there is all of that in there, and specifically what I'm talking about is that sometimes we don't see what the causal relationship is. Sometimes people will just treat us badly, even though they have no prior interaction with us. And so we don't see what that causal relationship is. And there may not be actually a specific causal relationship. It's just the fact that you happen to be in this place at this particular time. And that the thing that I'm talking about with thinking how people ought to treat us is that we have, for various reasons, we can have the opinion, I am such and such a person and I ought to be treated in this and thus and so way. And if we have that opinion and if we're clinging to it, when people treat us that in a way that's contrary to that, there can be varying degrees of suffering that arise from that and pain. And so part of the thing that we see is that what we can understand from this is that when people treat us in a way which we don't think they ought to have done, and we may or may not know that that's relative to our specific past behavior, and we see suffering arising from that treatment, we can look deeply into it and see, is that a component of it? Am I holding on to some view, some ideal about how people ought to treat me? And I'm not advocating people accepting abuse or ill treatment or disrespect or anything like that. Or I mean, by that I mean, you know, kind of not, not responsibly attending to those things. But there is a deeper quality of meditation practice in which we need to be, in a way, willing to even accept those things and make it into a kind of training for ourselves. What is the real causality here? We need to be able to not just say, well, that's a wrong behavior of that person, so I'm perfectly justified in getting upset and defensive and irritated. If that makes sense. Did you have
something? Oh, no, I'm just...
Okay. So it's a very difficult... It can be a very difficult area to talk about and to train with, and in a way to teach people to train with. Because a lot of times it can sound like what I'm saying is, you should just accept that person's bad behavior toward you and not do anything about it. And in one sense, that's exactly what I'm saying. And in another sense, that doesn't preclude taking some positive, responsible step as well. But really what I'm talking about is looking clearly at what's really going on and being willing to not be fooled by our own response to things. We're so deeply conditioned to attachment to our own understanding of the world that we don't see that attachment. We don't see our own holding on to our own mental conditioning. And part of the deep practice of meditation is being willing to let go of that conditioning. And sometimes that means going into difficult circumstances and really looking carefully at them. So the practice of wisdom is not, in one sense, for the faint of heart. Okay, so that is what I have to say about the basic concepts of Buddhism. Any questions, any more questions about what we talked about tonight or anything we talked about before? And Perfect Master, did you have any?
Not particularly coherently at the moment. I guess the thing that, I'll try to be coherent. When we are willing to let go of those things to which we cling, to which we, the ways in which we expect to be treated, etc., we move toward shunyata because we are not actively continuing to create a self. When we react from irritation or even from delight at the way we are treated, we need to be very careful that we may well be continuing to create a self. That may not be our intention. But this is where Dogen talks about to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to practice, is to understand wisdom. And to forget the self, what we forget the self by letting go of those grasping after the way we want to be treated or the way we want the world to be or whatever. We forget the self in the sense of letting go of the self. And that's Dogen's take on that exact same sentence that Irvin Leon was reading out there. So I hope that vaguely cogent anyway.
Thank you, that was very cogent. Okay, well, I think we can leave it there. Close the book. Thank you all for your help.